It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. If by Hollywood you mean Burbank, across the street from a Wiener Schnitzel that serves beer. This is 2 hours of the business end of show business that we do every Sunday on KEIB 1150 AM on your AM radio dial. And if you're listening to it outside of Los Angeles, you can listen to it all over the world on the iHeart Radio app. And speaking of Wiener Schnitzel, that's where we had our party last week. It was a late one. All you people that showed up, thank you. The people that showed up and realized it was a fake party and nobody was there, I apologize to you. Okay, let's do recap of the Oscars. The things were pretty good. It was, last year was about $16 million. This year it's $18.6 million. I guessed $18.5 million. And I'm a little disturbed because I entered a pool and 18.76. So I did 18.5, so maybe I didn't win, but I'm going to look into that. 4.03 rating among the 18 to 49 demographic. It's just a 13% improvement in overall viewers and 7% improvement in the 18-49 demographic over last year. And it was the highest rated entertainment program for the year. And that was second best was 15.66 million viewers for that Next Level Chef thing they did on Fox after the Super Bowl. And that was a disappointment because, I mean, how many people watch the Super Bowl? Shush. That's all they could do? Whoosh. So that's always good. You got your numbers got to go up so people can say whether things worked or not. And I think they worked, and I would say they worked because they hired live television producers instead of, like, hip movie producers. So if you didn't watch the show, it went by quickly. It was, like, 3.5 hours. There was, like, a half hour left, I thought, to go, and then they just went to, it was over, and they went to American Idol, which is pretty good. But Jimmy Kimmel, I think he was a good host. He kept things going. He kept the political stuff to a minimum. Kind of made fun of everybody, and I think he's solid. I mean, you could try to get someone that pleases people on both sides of the aisle, but then you're running into maybe a guy that just can't do it as well as Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel's a pro, and he prevented any train wrecks, like the La La Land thing or the slap of Chris Rock, and the show just went smooth. It wasn't, some people say it was boring because there was none of that, but, who wants that stuff? So, they have 10 Best Picture nominees. Some of them are just, there's no way you're going to see. Like, you're not going to go see women talking. I did as a punishment. And believe me, it was a punishment. It won Best Script or something like that. Of course, Best Picture, Everything Everywhere All at Once, won a bunch of acting categories, directing categories. They're the big story. I'm sure you've heard that. And that was a great movie. The thing that's interesting about that movie is that it came out early in the year. Usually only bad movies come out early in the year, like all the bad ones that are coming out now. So if you have Oscar contenders, you release them late in the year, so the Oscar voters, they're in their mind. This one, it was like March or something it got released? That's unheard of. So good for them. My favorite movie of the year was Living. And starring Bill Nye. And directed by Kazuo, I forgot how to pronounce his last name. Anyway, at least Triangle of Sadness got nominated, which I predicted. But a lot of people say it has a problem with its third act. I don't get it. I think the third act is great. I think the third act is the best act, if you want to know what I think. But I recommend it to people, and some people don't like it. I recommended Elvis to some people, and they hated it. So, what else happened at that thing? Nothing. Jimmy Kimmel made some jokes, and I have some of them for you if you didn't hear them. Would you like to hear Jimmy Kimmel's jokes? Okay. On his monologue, he said, if anyone in this theater commits an act of violence at any point during the show, you will be awarded the Oscar for Best Actor and permitted to give a 19-minute long speech. Then he said about the audience's response, if anything happens, he told the crowd, just do what you did last year, nothing. Just sit there and do absolutely nothing. Maybe even give the assailant a hug. What else did he say? He poked fun at James Cameron and Tom Cruise because these guys are the guys that are going out there. Everyone's got to go to the movies, telling people to go to the movies, and then they don't come to the Oscars. That's lame. Whatever they're doing, they should suck it up and go to the Oscars. So everybody's mad about that. I made a joke about the Banshees of Inisherin. They didn't win a lot, but that was great. It was a great movie. He said he noted their diversity of nominees from every corner of Dublin, and the odds of another fight on the stage just went way up. So I guess it's okay to make fun of Irish people. I don't care. I'm glad there's some people we can still make fun of. Now, on Hollywood's lack of new ideas, he said, poor Steven Spielberg had to make a movie about Steven Spielberg. And most people agree that that movie, The Fabelmans, there's just something wrong, something missing. I knew what it was. People say, I just can't put my finger on it. I can't put my finger on it. To me, it's an old guy trying to direct like Wes Anderson. He thinks Wes Anderson's a great director. He wanted to make thinks his movies look cool. He wanted to make his movies look cool like that. And this guy got a retro movie. He thought he could give it a retro look. So seemed forced. And I was uncomfortable with him telling a story about his mom being a whore. And and then everybody's saying, you know, she had to do it. She had to do it for herself. I'm like, okay, well, that's not a hero. I don't want to hear, I mean, if your mother's not heroic, make something up. And it was kind of funny that they had a thing where instead of getting played off, like with music, if you talk too long, they said you're going to get the dancers from RRR to escort you. And they did that. They escorted him off, and that was kind of funny. Until the next day when everybody complained that there was a lack of real South Asian dancers in that group. And it was a missed opportunity to cast some real South Asian dancers, and the Academy should be ashamed of themselves. So you can't win, as I said. That was my theme last week. You can't win. But you can't complain about the lack of diversity when, you know, the Asians won all these big prizes. There was one scandal. The only scandal in the building is Angela Bassett. She's nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Wakanda. Jamie Lee Curtis wins. Everybody stands up and applauds because Jamie Lee Curtis, that was pretty good. She was pretty good in that movie. Everybody loves that movie. And so there's another award for that movie. Everybody stands up and cheers except for Angela Bassett. She sits there and does not cheer. She's indignant. So that was the viral moment that everybody played over and over on the media. And that's not what you want. On Twitter, which I don't look at, but I'm reading something from Newsweek, the Twitter people said, one person said, I'm really sick of black people having to be gracious in the face of blatant disrespect, so I'm glad Angela Bassett lived in her truth in that moment. Ooh. Okay. That was her truth, so she's glad she was not gracious. Interesting. Another Twitter user said, good for Angela Bassett, not smiling nor clapping. Y'all expect black women not to only be exceptional, but to be happy for other who get accolades we deserve over and over. Okay, no accolades for that grammar. So evidently her fans think she did the right thing. We'll see what happens next year. But at least she was nominated. I mean, come on. It's a big deal. For a superhero movie, and you get nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Ooh. Let's take a break. We'll come back. After we check the traffic, we will talk about something else besides the Oscars. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. 2 hours of the business end of show business every Sunday here on KEIB 1150 AM. On your AM radio dial. Okay, let's go to my letterboxed stuff, because every week we go over... Oh, wait, that's the guy's name, the director's name. I couldn't remember it. Kazuo Ishiguro. He directed and wrote Remains of the Day and the movie Living, that you might want to see if you like, you know, slow movies that are touching about England in the post-war period. Living, starring Bill Nye. He was nominated for Best Actor. Did not win. Because the guy from Indiana Jones won. Good for him. Okay, so let's go to my letterboxed diary. See, I put all my movies in this diary, and then I remember what movies I saw. I couldn't do this radio show without it. Otherwise, I won't remember any of them. I don't remember anything. I went to church today, and during the Mass, I couldn't even remember what the homily was about. So... that's me. Okay, so I think I told you about Creed 3, saw that. It's pretty good. I didn't go to the movies after that. I had to go up to my cabin and shovel snow, basically. That's what I had to do. So I did. But I did watch two movies on the Disney Channel. First of all, I saw The Aristocats, which is a cartoon about like a tomcat and then a fancy cat, and it's like a rom-com. It's a rom-com. It's an animated rom-com about cats. It's pretty good. I give it 3 stars, maybe 3.5. But you know what movie I kill back to over and over again, which is like one of the best movies ever made? It is Blackbeard's Ghost, the 1968 Disney film starring a magnificent Peter Ustinov as Blackbeard himself, the genius Dean Jones, and the beautiful, fetching Suzanne Plachette. I mean, when I was a kid, 1968, this came out, and I'm 5 years old, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's so good. And this lady, oh, who is she? I want her to freeze her and grow up and make her my wife. I kind of did. And directed by Robert Stevenson. If you don't know anything about Robert Stevenson, what a life. This guy spent his life directing movies like the Shaggy D.A., The Shaggy... did you do The Shaggy Dog? I don't know if you did The Shaggy Dog. But, you know, all these kinds of movies like the Darby O'Gill and The Little People, one of the greatest movies ever made also. You haven't seen Darby O'Gill and the Little People? You should watch that every St. Patrick's Day. He directs The Absent-Minded Professor, the sequel, Son of Flubber, Mary Poppins, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Old Yeller, and the movie that I saw 17 times... in its original run at the Fox Rossmore Theater in Los Alamitos, California, in 1968, The Love Bug. So I'm 5 years old, and my mom would drop me off at the theater, and I could walk home after watching it 3 times. Usually I would watch it 3 times. I'd just keep watching, and there would be a double feature, so I'd be there all day. But Blackbeard's Ghost is like a perfect movie. This captain is a ghost, and he can't get out of his, what he would call it, a purgatory, unless he does a great deed. So he can't even get out of purgatory until someone summons up him from, and you don't know how it's going to happen, but it happens because Dean Jones, who's a do-gooder, buys a bedpan. So that's a poop joke. He buys a bedpan, an ancient bedpan that once belonged to Blackbeard's like widow. And then the map or the spell is hidden inside it. So he finds a spell, he says it, and here comes Blackbeard. He's, you know, it's one of those things where if you have a ghost and no one else can see him but you, you're going to go crazy. And everyone thinks he's crazy. But it works out in the end. And it's genius. And the sets, every set is just so cool. The casting, I don't know. It's not like they're not obsessed with like the youngest, coolest, new character actor. They use all like, you know, old people, people that you've seen in tons of movies, and they're all there together. It's epic. So the Blackbeard's Ghost, better and better every time I see it. I have to go back and change my rating in Letterboxd. Right now it's 4.5 stars. What has 5 stars, you ask? The movies I can recall that have 5 stars are Hidden Fortress by Akira Kurosawa, starring the beautiful Misa Yuhara. And High Noon, I gave that a 5, starring Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly. And the equally beautiful Katie Hirado. And a very, very young Lloyd Bridges. If you haven't seen that, you're an idiot. Now let's go to the movies that battled it out this weekend for the top spot. Number one, Shazam. 11 million, but they're calling it a flop. This is a big, epic superhero. 11 million ain't going to cut it in the opening weekend. Ant-Man did, you know, I don't know what they did, 40, 50, 60, 70. They're at 200 million. You think this thing's going to get to 200 million? So it's a DC movie. Sad for them, but it was, you know, put in the pipeline before the current regime. So I don't think they'll beat themselves up too much about it. They couldn't just take it off the shelves like they did Batgirl. Do you know that Brandon Fraser was in Batgirl? The movie that was so bad they couldn't release it? So it's so bad they can't release it. And Brandon Fraser is in the Oscar running to win Best Actor for The Whale. And the only thing that can hurt him would be the release of a terrible movie. And somehow, he must have prayed because that movie was taken off the shelf. No one got to see what Brandon Fraser did in Batgirl, and he wins Best Actor for The Whale. And he was a great actor in it. I didn't like the movie, but he was a great actor. Scream 6 is number 2. It's now at 63 million. And a hit. I think it cost 25 million to make. Creed 3 cost a lot more, but it's making a lot more. 116 million at number 3. 65, the Adam Driver movie. You know what? That might do some. That might make, I don't know. It's $45 million epic science fiction dinosaur movie. But you need like $130 million to pull that off, and they did it for $45 million. Sounds like something I would do. But, you know, sometimes those digital monsters, if you blow them up on a screen, they look kind of lame, but I don't know. We'll see. Ant-Man and the Wasp at number 5. I really like that movie. $202 million. Cocaine Bear drops from... actually, it went up. Five. Drops from number 5 to number 6. And then it was Cocaine Bear has grossed $55 million in the U.S. And it cost $35. So there will be a sequel. And after that, you got Champions, the Woody Harrelson movie where he is a Special Olympics coach, and I, myself, was a Special Olympics coach in the 80s, and I'll tell you what, there's nothing like that. If I could make a living at that and pay the bills, I'd just do nothing else. It's so much fun. Then we have, that's called Champions, Avatar, Puss in Boots, Man Called Otto, something called Inside, 80 for Brady, and Violent Night round out the top movies. The anticipated movies. What movies are people going to go see soon? John Wick. Super Mario Brothers movie. The Little Mermaid live action one. And The Pope's Exorcist. It's very sensational. I don't know. My wife doesn't let me see Exorcist movies. So I might not go see them. But anyway, that's movies for you last week and this week. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. Let's take a break. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about concerts. We usually talk about TV next, but today we're going to talk about concerts. The Cure has a concert coming up. You know, The Cure. Robert Smith, he's goth post-punk band. They were big when I graduated from high school, and they've always been a favorite of anyone. You know, I think anyone that has it, is there any punk adjacent stuff.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is made possible by PwC. A robot may not be coming for your job, but competitors are coming for your market share. At PwC, we pair the right tech with the right solutions to help you gain a competitive edge. Reimagine operations from the cloud, fuel innovation with responsible AI, and detect risks before they become headlines. That's human-led and tech-powered. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
That you like The Cure? You like Morrissey, Depeche Mode, New Order? You like The Cure. So The Cure's coming. And this is one of those tours where they're just going to, you know, usually at this point in people's lives, they come back and they just kill it. They have decided to try this technique of ticket selling. You might have heard about it, where your name will be attached to the ticket. So if you don't use that ticket, you can't sell it to somebody. So that way the scalpers cannot make any money off of that ticket. And I talked to a prominent concert promoter about this. And I'm like, how does this work? And will this work? And he goes, yeah. We will, there'll be a name attached to the ticket. You know, kind of like an airline ticket. Think of it that way. Can you sell your airline ticket? No. What happens if you don't go to your airline ticket? Can you stand out front and sell it to someone else? No. What happens if you don't use it? There's an empty seat there. Okay. So there's no scalping going on in airline tickets. So why don't they do that with concert tickets? You think, yeah, why don't they? And then it sounds perfect, and they're doing it. But then, you know, why don't they? Well, think about it. Yeah, why don't they? Why doesn't Pearl Jam do it, like the ethical bands that? Why don't they do it? Well, it's for one thing, there's a lot of reasons why people don't do it and why it won't catch on. If you do it and you buy a ticket, tickets go on sale like, you know, 6-8 months in advance now. So you're going to buy a ticket to something? What are you doing 6 or 8 months from now on a Thursday? You're going to drive to the Greek Theater? You don't know. So, but you buy them because if you can't go, you just sell them to someone else or give them to someone else. Now you can't do that. So why would you buy them? Okay, so that's a chilling effect on tickets overall. People aren't going to buy them until that day. Okay, that's no way to plan a tour. We don't know what's going to do good. So what if you want to just, what if you're single and you want to bring a date? Good luck. You're screwed too. So you got some problems. Now what happens if there's empty seats? What if this happens, like, who are the most people are going to just not show up? It's going to be the rich people out front. So they don't show up. Now the artist is trying to rock out with an empty front section. The artist doesn't want that. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that The Cure did this. I don't know why they didn't just do what everyone else does. I guess they really like their fans. But, you know, because most bands, when they get to that age, they don't like their fans anymore. Like, if you think Springsteen likes his fans anymore, no. Fleetwood Mac, they don't like their fans. They're just like 7 years old. Give me the money. I need the money. Just show me the money. I've heard BS my entire career. All I know about is if I get the money, I get the money. If you tell me some song and dance about my fans, I know I'm going to get screwed. So the older ones, they just don't care anymore. So what's going to happen? There's going to be empty seats at this Cure thing. They're going to play to empty seats. And then less other bands aren't. Why don't these other, I don't want to name any bands, but why don't they do it? Here's what happens with tickets too. People buy tickets and it's so easy when you buy them online to just, you can put them up for sale right afterwards. So you buy them, you put them up for sale. You don't have to do anything. You just pushed a button. And, you know, then the promoter, like, at that website, they say, okay, this guy bought him, but he wants to put him up for sale. Let's put him up for sale for him. So let's say he bought him for $100. You put him up for sale for $200. Someone buys it for $200 because it's all sold out, so there's a demand. So that extra $100 that he got, there's a fee that is being charged by the promoter, the ticket seller. And so he doesn't get the whole $100. Some of it goes to the promoter. And the person who buys it, he pays an extra fee because this other guy who bought it first already paid a fee. So now that promoter's getting three fees from this transaction. And the band gets a piece of that. They won't tell you that, but they get a piece of that. So do they want that to go away? No. That's how they get paid. So when you see this and you see congressional hearings and testimony and see people freaking out, there's really nothing you can do. And if you want to go to a show, like my dad used to say, when I asked him, he took me to dinner. He took me to a lot of restaurants in L.A. And, you know, he was the maitre d', the valet, the waiter, bartender, the cheese guy, the sommelier. And my dad's throwing out 20s everywhere. And this is like, you know, early 70s. $20 was something. He's throwing 20s. I just keep, every night, I just see him pulling 20s out of his pocket and giving them to everybody who's walking by. And I go to my dad. I go, Dad, you throw a lot of 20s out. I mean, that's got to add up. I mean, that's like, it's expensive to be you. He goes, yeah. But so there's, here's what you do. I go, yeah, well, my dad's going to give me this financial advice. And he says, what you do is you make more money than you can jump a circus horse over. That was my dad's advice. So I passed that Conrad Escalante advice on to you. You want to go see these concerts? Make more money than you can jump a circus horse over. Okay, making a murderer. The Netflix documentary released in December 2015 tells the story of Stephen Avery, who spent 18 years in prison for a rape that he didn't commit before DNA evidence exonerated him. He returned home only to be arrested, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison for another murder. The 10-part docuseries explores Avery's defense that he was framed by the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Office, including this guy named Andrew Colborne, who filed a defamation claim against Netflix a few years ago, and now we're going to give you the results of that. The documentary contended that law enforcement may have planted evidence because they were embarrassed by Avery's wrongful conviction and feared potentially massive monetary damages that he stood to recover in a civil litigation. So Colborne sues Netflix in 2018, and the producers, Laura Ricciardi and Moira Demos, along with their production company, and they sue him for defamation. They're sued for defamation, and you remember this. This sparked the whole true crime boom, a true crime docuseries boom that we're going through right now. Now Colborne alleged that the series defamed him by abridging in-court testimony, adopting allegations that Avery was framed as fact, and portraying Avery in a more flattering light than he deserved. Now, if you watch this, that's true. They really leaned and said, hey, this guy's a villain, and this guy didn't do anything. So if you're the villain, you're like, hey, wait a second. Maybe I didn't do anything, and maybe he didn't. But, you know, they made it look like he did. So he sued. Now, to prove defamation, you know, we talk about this all the time, there must be proof that the defendant published a false statement, so it's got to be false. For public officials like Colborne, he's a public figure, so now we need malice. We need clear and convincing evidence that the defamatory statements themselves were published with actual malice or the knowledge that they were false or with reckless disregard to the truth. You have to have been, like the common law version, they call that, you were trying to cause harm. But the judge concluded, and this is, wait a second. Okay, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back. I'm going to give you the results. There has been a decision in the Netflix defamation suit over making of a murderer, and we'll check the traffic and we'll come back. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, I mean Burbank. And I'm going through right now. This is the business end of show business, if you're just tuning in. We do it every Sunday, KEIB, 1150 on your AM dial, 5 to 7. Now, we're talking about the defamation case of this guy named Colborn, who was the detective at the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Office. And he sued Netflix, saying that they, his name is Andrew Colborn, that when they made this thing and released it in 2015, they used music, they used abridged testimony, and they made all kinds of cinematic tricks to make him look like he was a villain and this Avery guy was a victim. Now, they went after this guy. They wrongly convicted him of one rape. And then when he got out, if you saw it, he goes right back into jail for a murder. So what did the judge say? Because we have a defamation case. What do we need? We need a false testimony. And it has to be something that makes you spit on the ground. You can't just say that person has a red car and he has a blue car. And then you sue him because someone published a false statement about you, and it's demonstrably false because your car is blue and they said it was red. No, it has to be something that makes people spit on the ground. Like, that man eats children. Okay, that if someone tells you that this guy over here, he eats children, you go, ugh, I hate that. That's defamatory. So the defamatory statements were saying that he railroaded this guy and planted evidence, falsely arrested him. Now, the judge, what did the judge say? The judge said that the legal standards wipe out the bulk of Andrew Colborn's case, finding the suit adopts an overboard definition of defamation. Most of his gripes, this is the judge talking, most of his gripes read more like media criticism, better suited to the op-ed section. They are not actionable statements that could even potentially be defamatory under Wisconsin's law. They're not even close, he says. And this is summary judgment, so they're throwing it out without having a trial. On summary judgment, Colborn identified 52 instances of alleged defamation. He pointed to the series use of music and graphics that allegedly implied improper conduct, and the alteration of reaction shots from Avery's homicide trial, among other things. Of course, this is editing for drama. And their drama, their script is, this guy's a villain, this guy is a victim. And it was at this time where you could only get something sold if you had someone that was wrongly convicted of a crime, or if you thought they were wrongly convicted of a crime. The people, the networks weren't buying anything where you were just talking about a guy who deserved to fry, and he did fry. No, they want people, they wanted to make cops look bad at that time, and this guy was, you know, he was a bad cop. It wasn't hard to make him look bad. So the judge said that, sided with Netflix. He said that none of the allegations can support a legal claim. Music and graphics, for example, are not actionable statements that can subject a publisher to liability based solely on an unnerving musical motif. The judge raised the same issues with his other gripes. He objects to Stephen Avery's voiceover. This is the judge talking. And the voiceover says this: they had the evidence back in 1985 that I didn't do it, but nobody said anything. Okay, so the judge says the Colborn identifies this voiceover as defamatory, but he never explains how it implicates him and why it is false. So it's just a list of gripes that how dare they do this? I'm going to sue them. He thought he could get a settlement out of them. They said, and if you think you're going to get a settlement out of a studio or a network because they defame you, you have to be prepared for them to go to the wall, because if they settle with you, then they got to settle with a bunch of other people. So they have to, sometimes they have to just go to trial and win, even though they know it's going to cost them a lot more money than they could have just given you, could have given this guy $1 million, maybe he walks away. Now, this trial probably cost him, you know, $15 million in legal fees. So the judge told him some alteration is necessary, since no documentary is a true, in the strictest sense of the word, because They all abbreviate, edit, and emphasize certain facts. If every altered quotation met the falsity requirement to prove actual malice, the judge said that journalism would require a radical change, inconsistent with First Amendment principles. Minor inaccuracies are forgiven as long as the substance of the statements remains unchanged, he concluded. So, that is a big win for documentary makers all over the place, because now we have a judge speaking, saying that, hey, give me a break, or give these guys a break. It's hard to do this. Now, does it mean that this guy was innocent and that this Andrew Colburn guy planted evidence and all that stuff? No, doesn't mean that. But it does mean that if you're in that game, be careful, because a documentary could be made about you and they can make you look really bad, and you can sue them and you might lose, like this guy did. So now his lawyers are the losers, because they probably took it on contingency. They probably, you know, spent a ton of money litigating this, and now they've lost. Can he appeal? Yeah, but it looks really bad for him. And a company like Netflix needs wins like this, because they're constantly making decisions about what they're going to put on the air and whether someone's going to come out of the woodworks and sue them. And I say good for them for sticking to their guns and fighting this and winning. You know, because I'm a producer of television, and sometimes I'll have something and my network will go, oh, don't do that. Don't put that on the air. Because one time I said, well, we have a solid case if they come back and they say this or that. And I had a network say, yeah, but I go, the worst thing that could happen is this guy's family could put a post on Facebook and say, this was mean. He goes, that's what I'm talking about. I don't want to see that. I don't want that. So take it out. And, you know, that's hard to do when you're a TV producer. But the network has a final say. So you have to do it. And I don't complain. I just go, okay, it's, it's that guy's job if it comes back to bite him. But what this does is it makes Netflix look like a more attractive platform for prominent documentary series and movie makers to go to. Because you might be having an argument with one network that you're at, and you're thinking, like, Netflix lets people get away with this, or they stand behind their filmmakers more. So this kind of stuff attracts better producers, writers, investigators. So big win for Netflix. Okay, got just a few minutes left in this segment. I want to talk about artificial intelligence, AI, and copyright. Okay, AI, as you know, you can type prompts into a site like OpenAI, the ChatGPT thing. It's the one I use. And you type in something, and it'll spit out something that's seemingly very creative. It could type out a song. Okay, let's say we'll start with a song. Or a story. Let's say a short story. You say, write me a story about three guys who find a bag of money. Okay, it's going to spit out something like this. There are three guys. They are named Matt, Jack, and Leroy. And this thing will give it names. They come from a poor neighborhood. They never had anything. One of their parents is on disability. You know, it makes up stuff, all that kind of stuff, and it just spews it out. It makes this whole story. And so they find a bag of money, and Jack wants to give it to the cops. Matt wants to take and give it to charity. Leroy wants to spend it all right now on cocaine. You know, whatever. It'll make up something. Now, for copyright authorship, the U.S. Copyright Office has given some guidance on this stuff now. And they have said that they will not grant copyright ownership to people who if you just push a button and put something this story in there and try to copyright it, they will say no. It has to be a human. We will not register it. But think of it like this: like you took a public domain story and you tried to copyright it. No. But if you alter it and make it a derivative work, you could protect the parts that you put into it. Or if you assembled it and you arranged it and you aggregated it into a collection, you could copyright that collection. Okay, this is the first of many AI copyright discussions we'll probably have in the future, and I just wanted to leave you with that, and also leave you with just a taste of the greatest song ever written. There's always more coming. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.